and welcome to the Triathlon Coach Podcast. My name's Simon Ward and I'm your host for this weekly show where my goal is to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic athletes and coaching them to race at distances from sprint through to Ironman. Reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so if you enjoy today's conversation, I'd really appreciate it if you could drop into iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher and leave a rating and a review. And while you're there, please subscribe to our weekly episodes so that they can be downloaded straight into your phone or your iPad or wherever you choose to listen to them. And finally, to say thank you, I have a free gift for you. I've put together 25 of my top tips amassed from 30 years of racing and training and coaching in the sport. All you have to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she'll send it right out to you. Okay, now it's time to crack on with today's guest. Welcome back, listeners. And today we're talking mind matters. So I'm your host, Simon Ward, and my guest this afternoon is Mr. John Thompson. Now, John's a friend of mine. He lives in Leeds, so he's a Yorkshireman, which marks him out as a good lad in my book. And I refer to him when I'm speaking about him with my friends as the mindset man. Would that be an accurate reflection of what you do, John? Welcome to the show as well.
Thank you very much. Hello, listeners. It sounds a little bit Alan Partridge, Mind Matters. So a lot of people would introduce me as something like that, and I guess that's okay. I'm really interested in how things work with people, and what amazes me with the people that I come into contact with is how they think and the situations they get into, both at business and in life. And it's my job to help them make sense of their world, to solve problems and make decisions. So I can't do that. So the mind is something that does interest me, and it works in a very simple but also a very complex way. So I don't mind being called the mind matters guy. But however, I would more prefer to be classed as a Yorkshireman. That'd be a great title because it's almost like a degree in itself, being from Yorkshire. There's a certain amount of common senseness about being from Yorkshire, and I apologise to any of the listeners that are not from Yorkshire.
There are some.
Yes.
And for our listeners who are on the other side of the world, perhaps they don't quite understand why we would make a big thing about being from Yorkshire. Now, I know that there are no degrees in Yorkshireness at the moment, John, but you do have a degree in psychology, I think, or is it a master's?
No, it's not a master's. I studied psychology at Leeds. I was doing a computer course at Park Lane College, and I used to sit with some psychology students, and they were talking about electric shocks and doing certain things on people, sort of semi-torturing them. So I got involved in, that sounds quite interesting. And then I went on to do a psychology degree, studied at Leeds. And that was very interesting because it was scientific. And with science, it's almost, you can take something to court and prove it. It's very, it's not subjective, it's objective. And it's very clear and precise. However, outside of that study, I then found some other disciplines, some other fields of study that were not scientific and they were very abstract. And I found that the results that people got using these techniques far exceeded the psychological experimental processes. So I then became more interested in things like NLP, Ericksonian hypnosis, and some new age type spiritual things, which for a Yorkshireman, I had to experiment to just check out the validity of them. And I found personally that there were some benefits, and I could explain them from scientific, psychological. So that I love science, I love proving facts. However, as human beings, there's more emphasis that can be put on your state that you're in, the stories that you tell, the images and things that you make up in your mind, that can far exceed some of the scientific research.
As a coach, I'm well versed, I think, in looking after the body, in helping people develop their strength, mobility, their aerobic fitness in order to be able to perform the three disciplines in triathlon. And I've worked in sports outside of that, but it's always been on how can I help them as the fitness conditioner to get their body into the right state. And I'm fairly certain that most listeners will understand that the body can only do so much and that the mind is probably untapped or not successfully tapped by most people in terms of making the most of what they've got. So I don't think that most triathletes that I'm working with have even reached the limits of their own physical abilities, but certainly if they could squeeze a little bit more out of their physical ability and get a lot more out of their mental ability, I'm pretty certain that their results would probably be way beyond what they've ever dreamed of. And you and I have done a bit of work, John, where we team up and you try to help them fix the head and I try to help them fix the body. And as a whole package, then we can deliver them to the start line in the optimal state. You talked about state there, in the optimal state to achieve their goals. So what I thought we could do today is divide this conversation into two parts. Race day is what everybody is really concerned about, the opportunity to perform. And for most triathletes, there'll be two or three races per year that they've earmarked as their, what they call their A race. So the one where they really want to do well. Could be a world championship, could be an opportunity to qualify to race for Great Britain as an age grouper, could be a race where they're aiming to get a personal best. But there's 365 days in the year, which means that if they're racing on three of them, there's 362 days a year when they're going to be going through the humdrum process of training. And it does get a bit monotonous. We're doing the same stuff. We're swimming, biking and running and then repeating. So there's a lot of stuff in there. So I want to talk about what tactics they can use and what skills that you can help them with to get through the challenges that they face on a daily basis. And then I'd like to talk about, once they're on that start line, what skills and tactics they can employ to then fulfill all of the physical fitness that they've spent months and months developing.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yep.
Right. So let's start at the beginning then. So triathlon's a sport with three disciplines, swim, bike and run. And most people would say that you need to give a bit of attention to each. You know, a little bit more for some people who've got a swimming background, but maybe not on the bike. A little bit more swimming for some people who don't come from that background. But really, you've got to divide your time between those. Now, how are we going to make sure, because there's no guarantee that when they turn up at the pool or at the track or to go on the bike, there's no guarantee that they're going to be in the right mental state, because they're probably coming from either having slept badly and going to the pool, or they've probably come from work and maybe things haven't gone right in that day, or they've been stuck in traffic, or maybe they've got some more sort of long-term family problems or environmental problems that are worrying them. How are we going to make sure that they turn up and get into the right state in order to train effectively on that day?
Couple of reasons, and there's one main thing that all of this is totally useless if they don't know this. If they're going to do or train to be a triathlete, that there needs to be a reason, because at one level they're actually committing to not being with their partner, to not being with their children, to changing their whole schedule around work and health and diet, to some degree putting themselves through some kind of challenge or pain. So it all starts with making a decision to do something. And I guess somebody would do a smaller triathlon prior to doing a larger one. I don't know.
Not always.
Right. So it starts with a decision. And this decision is, their decision-making process is key to the whole thing, because every time they go to do some more training, it's all based on this decision that started off this train of events. So they've got to know why they're doing it, or what it's for. When you know that, you can push through the hard yards. We see this on little events like 5Ks for breast cancer. There'll be people who they'll have a name of a person on their back, and they're doing this for that person or in remembrance of that person. Same with marathons. You see a lot of people getting highly emotional when they cross the finishing line because it's symbolic and it means something. It's the same with the triathlete. It's either for something for them that they may know or not know, or it may be in some way, shape or form for somebody else or to prove something to somebody else. So if you don't know what the reason is that you're actually committing to go on this journey, you're going to be lost a little bit. So whenever you turn up at the pool and you don't feel like it, you need to have some essence of connection with this reason. And then, as you see in the Olympics, a lot of people will use other stimuli like headphones, certain music, certain sounds, certain commentaries that get them into that state. What I would say is where you train and who you train with are all part of that state-making process. And then you get a lot of people who get there, but for some reason they might have a conversation, for some reason they might start late, for some reason they forgot this or that. At some level, they tend to sabotage what they're about to do. And that would suggest there's a certain conflict within that person. It may be that they've lost the connection with the reason, or the reason may have changed.
So an example here would be, I coach a swim session on a Wednesday morning. We typically have 15, 20 people turn up. The session starts at 7 o'clock. Most people are there at 5 to 7 to get on poolside, to get to the right lane, to pay. The session is open from 7. Some people get in straight away. Others will stand chatting on poolside until 5 past, 10 past. Typically, these are often the people who are the ones who need to be in there swimming for the whole session. And whereas the good ones who could afford to miss 10 minutes, they're already in there. So there may be a clue in there that the reason why they're slightly more skilled is because they get on with it straight away. But there may be something else.
The people who are chatting, to some degree, we would call that they've been who they are, that they're all about themselves. They're in their own body, filtering the world through their own body. The people who get in and go forward and start doing it on the dot, they're people who've actually been mentally preparing and going over and making a movie of, right, when I get there, I'm going to do this, going to do that. So they've actually been making a mental movie of them watching themselves at poolside, getting in and going forward. If anybody struck up a conversation with these people, it would be cut down quite quickly because they've programmed themselves. The people who are stood chatting or a little bit late in the water, I would say their mental preparedness hasn't been good because they've been distracted or they've lost their reason for actually being there.
So this, for those people, and I guess that...
Oh, there might be something interesting to talk about. It could be, you know, Leeds United are top of the league again, or it could be, you know, Brexit's being solved. So there's multiple reasons that people do have a chat and don't get in straight away.
So that's funny.
To be fair.
So that's funny because the way things are going at the moment, Brexit's unlikely to be solved by the time people listen to this. But Leeds United may or may not be on top depending on what happens next week because they've been up and down as well.
Exactly. So you've always got to be aware of other factors that are going off. And if you're a triathlete, there are always going to be noise and other things. But the people who really stick to it are people who can cut out the noise.
Right. So, I mean, we all have, nobody's perfect. Everybody has ebb and flow in their life. But those people that you were talking about that get on with it are probably better able to control that ebb and flow and get focused on the things they need to do. For those who find it a little bit more difficult, or perhaps they're just not that keen on swimming, but they know they need to do it, and then they've got to spend 10 minutes sort of getting the head into the right place before they get in the water. Is there something that they could be doing on that drive to the pool? Is there music they could be listening to? Could they listen to a podcast? Or would it be better if they drove to the pool in complete silence but just reminded themselves why they were doing this in the first place and what they're about to do?
It could be all of them things. And it's just knowing what to do. But it all boils down to what's your intention? Why are you doing it anyway? Because it is a big ask. So when they know that, there may be seasonal times where certain music would stimulate certain states. It may be a call from somebody or wearing a certain piece of footwear or a certain t-shirt, that would affect their state. Sometimes, you know, colours, noises can affect a person's state. Sometimes people are highly alert and better prepared on a morning, other people on an evening, depending on their cycle, depending on the weather. So it's up to a person to know what their triggers are to put them into a state. Now, I will say that as human beings, we can change state within a heartbeat. So there's no excuses, I've got the wrong trainers, it's not the right time of day. As human beings, we have the ability to change our states literally within a heartbeat. And the inability to do that suggests to me a lack of connection with the unconscious, which is the thing that made the decision in the first place. So it's all about connecting to the unconscious, which is the thing that runs your body, it digests, it breathes, it organizes everything. And if you're not connected to that part of you, and if you don't know how that's stimulated, then that's going to have a knock-on effect to the results you get in your health and your diet.
So is there an element of mindfulness in this then, that most triathletes would be creatures of habit, and so because of the way in which the pool timetable works, there will be certain days when it's better for them to organise to go to the pool. So they'll get up on a Tuesday morning and a Thursday morning and a Saturday morning, and before they know it, they've got the kit on and they're in the car and they've got the coffee and they're driving to the pool. But as we said, though, some days you can be up for it and some days you can't. But is there a point where they need to actually just get in the moment and think, what am I doing now? I'm going to the pool. What's my intention today? I'm going to swim. Why am I going to swim? Because I'm training to do that triathlon because it's in memory of Bob or Joe or something.
Anything to evoke emotion. So if you book a holiday to New York and it's your first time, at some level, as soon as you've booked that holiday, you're there. Your mind is activating and processing images and feelings and sounds, conversations that you're having, words. It's almost like the holiday's already started. And a training session should be like that. You can generate energy as soon as you get poolside. But I think the difference between the people that get in straight away, they're the people that are already excited. They're already programmed because a week ago, they were thinking about this particular session. They got their speedos out and they'd ironed them, or they got the whatever it is that they do and have to be prepared. It's like that. It's like booking a holiday. As soon as you commit and know you're going, your mind starts to prepare you. Now, if you're not doing that for a training session, then you're sort of missing a trick. That's a really simple thing that some people do, some people don't, but the difference between the people who get there and are consistent, they naturally find some massive value in doing the training.
If you're an Olympic athlete, you have a reason why every 4 years, don't you? And your first job is to make sure that you qualify to get selected. And then your second job is to put on your best performance in front of the world on that given day. And so you have a sense of why when you wake up every morning. And in order to do that, you know, there's other people who've also got that same sense of why and are training hard.
Yeah.
So they're highly motivated people, but they've always got that reason for doing stuff in the forefront of the mind. And you see it when we train at the pool on a Wednesday morning. We're lucky enough to have the triathlon performance squad in there. So there's several athletes who would be in contention for the next Olympics in 2 years' time. And you see them there. Their session starts at just after 7, but often they're on poolside at 10 to 7. You can see them doing some stretching, some warming up, looking at the pool. They know what's to come. And as soon as the session's on the board, they're in the water and they're warming up ready. So again, are these supernatural people? Do they have different abilities in the mind, or have they just trained themselves and acquired those skills?
Here's the difference between those people. If you're going to be preparing for the Olympics, if you're going to be going for it and there's certain gates that you need to get through, those people tend to know a reason why they want to do it. And that is a big drive. But the big thing that they have as an asset is people around them, people who coach them, people who support them, people who train with them. And it's the same in business. There's a lot of people who are capable of doing like really good business But if they're hanging around with other people who are mediocre in that sector or are negative thinking around that type of business, that is going to affect them. So the difference between Olympic athletes, I would say, is the people who they have around them, the ability of those people to understand the triggers to help them change their state, and also support them throughout that. And you get a lot of good swimming clubs, running clubs, where, you know, some are better than others. And it's all depends on the characters and the leaders that are within those clubs. So you've got to watch who you hang around with, because that's going to rub off on you.
That brings me on to something else then. I can't remember who it is. You might be able to tell me that there is this phrase that you are the result of the five people that are close to you that you hang around with. So if you want to be a millionaire and you hang around with gamblers and chancers and people who are hoping that black comes up instead of red, and not willing to put in the hard yards, it's not likely that you're going to be a millionaire. But if you hang around with five successful entrepreneurs who make mistakes but learn from them and, you know, put themselves out there and work hard, the chances are that you might not become a millionaire, but that's going to rub off on you and you're going to achieve more success because of the people you've chosen to hang around with.
That is ultimately how, as human organisms, we learn. So in the first 5-7 years of our lives, whatever environment we're in, whatever era we're born into, whatever our parents are doing, our teachers are doing, the places where we live, that is going to be your hard drive, because we model what's around us. Now, for some people, that can sit on their hard drive and be a driver for them, or it can be a hindrance for them. But when you're an adult, in your teens or further on, you're still learning. And it's how we learn as unconscious beings. The media, news, information, people, whatever's happening around you is going to affect you. Social media, it's a huge effect these days. So it's about putting yourself in an environment where you're stimulated for the right reason. It's about being around people who you want to aspire to be. A businessman that I know, he said, if I'm in a room and I'm the smartest guy in the room, I'm in the wrong room. So he would put himself in environments where he is the least impressive person in that room, because he knows he's going to learn.
So that would be like an athlete putting themselves into a group where they're not the best athlete.
Totally.
In order to aspire to be like those people. Difficult then if you're the Olympic champion and you have a group of people who are aspiring to be like you and knock you off that spot. But I guess that some of those people are quite special. They would be driven by the fact that those people are trying to overtake them.
But that's where you're going. So in Olympic sport, as you progress in a group, you'll be able to do X, Y, and Z to a certain level. It's like, right, time to train with this group. It's like the Football League. You know, you're going Division 1, Division 2, Championship, Premier. You're moving up. But there gets a point where do we go now? And sometimes I think that it's like the Rocky films. You can explain so much with the Rocky films. If you're Rocky and you're like the top of the tree, it's almost like, who have you got to learn from? Where can you aspire to be? But if you're like second, nobody's going to like you second. And it's like, do you know what? It's like, we're second, but we can be first. So the eye of the tiger, as Rocky would say, that can sometimes spur people on even more. And it's harder, I think, to stay at the top than it is to be second. Because if you're second, you always know what you've got in the tank to move further forward.
Let's just finish off on support teams. If I was an age group triathlete, I think, right, there are those five guys or five girls that are better than me. I want to train with them because they're physically faster than me. So they will force me to train harder than I currently do. And therefore, I'll get faster. Now, that works to a certain point, but there's only so much hard training you can do before your body rebels.
Okay.
So you can't train hard all the time. However, if I'm understanding you, it's not necessary to be around athletes and training with them all the time. If you're in an environment that promotes success, if you have a coach that's encouraging and motivating and sees your potential and you know, gives you the hard word occasionally, but also encourages you, if you've got club mates who have created a structure where the training sessions are always welcoming. Everybody's a supportive group rather than, you know, different personalities creating anxiety and stress. And then that is also a good place to be. If you've got if you're an aspiring athlete, you've got parents that are encouraging you and providing the right environment, then all of those things can create that place where you can thrive. You don't necessarily have to be training all the time with those people,
about learning and integrating good patterns. And they don't have to be coaches or people in the sport. You could be around your son or your daughter. And if your son or your daughter is one of those people that has got tenacity or persistence to do a jigsaw, that will affect you. So they don't have to be in the field that you're in. You just need to be around good people that have got good patterns that you can learn from and integrate that are going to help you in what you do. But if you're around people who have a negative influence, then that will affect you. And just coming back to something that you said, if you're around these people, they will help you do X, Y, and Z. That's incorrect. They will not. You will do that. So wherever you are right now in your training, in your life, that's exactly where you deserve to be because you've earned it. So if that's good or bad, you've earned it. And that's a great measurement because you deserve to be there. And if you don't want to be there, take a look and smell the coffee and make the adjustments you need to make. But wherever you are, that's exactly where you've earned it.
That's quite an interesting comment because there are a lot of people who have what's becoming popularly known as imposter syndrome. So they maybe get selected for Great Britain or, you know, you go to World Championships and you see all these super lean people that have got expensive bikes and they're tanned and they look like they know what they're doing. And you think, well, I shouldn't be here. I'm not supposed to be here. But you have earned your place. You've been selected. You met the selection criteria. You got selected because of the work you've done. So you do deserve to be there. I suppose then there's a disconnect between convincing yourself you deserve to be there.
No, that's you. That is like a huge, huge thing because people who are triathletes, they do have like qualities that other people don't have, the consistency, persistence, direction, vision. And they actually achieve more in other areas of their life as well because these patterns transfer. But the imposter syndrome, you do get people who have got, wow, I won that race, I won this. Am I really worth it? Is it really me? And this is where the mind comes in because you need to update yourself to who you are now, what your identity is. I was with a businessman this week. Last week, he nipped over to Switzerland somewhere to go skiing for a day because his friends were there. He just thought he'd surprise them. This weekend, he's going to Dallas because a company in Dallas are sending him over there because they want to get some information from him. He is like not confident in his abilities as a businessman. And I said, if I was talking to you in the pub, I said, what did you do last week? He said, oh, I nipped over to Switzerland for a day skiing. What are you doing this weekend? Oh, I'm over to Dallas. It's like he doesn't believe it. But if he was just to take a look in the mirror or see what other people see, and it's exactly the same with sports people, the accolades are huge. And a lot of people get a lot of angst because they've not updated themselves. They're still like a younger, it's like, yeah, he's a guy, he's the world champion, but inside he's like a little kid who's not grown up yet. And this is where the integration of developing yourself, just because you're a triathlete, doesn't mean to say that you're not prone to all the other things that are going on in the world. Mental health issues are very popular. I won't say trendy, but there's an awareness now. So whatever you do, we're all prone to mental health issues. And that doesn't mean to say that you're massively ill. A mental health issue could be something as I'm a little bit unconfident about myself, or I don't know whether I can do that, or I might have a panic attack when I do this. So we all get it. If you're alive, you're going to have mental health issues, like you're going to have health issues. And, you know, imposter syndrome, it's huge. A lot of directors of big businesses come to me and they're almost in tears. John, nobody knows that I don't have a degree. And it's like, who cares? It's like, really, who cares? But most of the people I employ, they've all got degrees. And it's like, so how smart must you be to be doing that? But it's almost like, no, if anybody found out, and that really affects their enjoyment of life. So your mind and your body, whether you're a triathlete, which is just a label anyway, you're always much more than that. If you do something in your life, buy your wife some flowers, take your kid to the park, do something that you don't normally do, that's going to make you feel better about yourself, so that when you go into the pool, there's less in your unconscious.
I've observed over the years that most triathletes are what you call high achievers. I've known many people who have got three children, a business to run. They work 60 hours a week. You know, they may be studying for a master's or an MBA at the same time. And so they decide they want to do a triathlon because that finishes the puzzle. And so they make it happen. They find a way of making it happen. But often these same people have these same insecurities. I'm not good enough. I mean, when you're a triathlete, you're in a, you know, if you took 100 randomly selected people from the street in Leeds that were the same age as, you know, our example, they would be at the front of the queue in terms of fitness and health. But because triathlon is a very elite pool of people all doing it, they're comparing themselves against this small pool and thinking, I'm not good enough because I'm not Alistair Brownlee, he's so good, or I'm not Jessica Learmonth because she's so good. But and I do wonder whether it's worth having this reality check every now and again to think about where you actually place. You know, actually, I'm in the top 0.1% of the population here, not the bottom 10%. And if they had a reality check occasionally and thought about all the things they have achieved rather than what they haven't achieved yet, you know, is that something you recommend?
Yeah, it's the balance, because a lot of people in whatever career as a sportsman, career as a businessman, there's going to be a point where you change or where you lose the top spot, or you lose that accolade due to your age, due to your health, due to the time. And that's the dangerous point where people lose their identity. It's like, am I has-been now? Like, get a lot of actors or singers that, you know, have a big hit with this song or a big hit with this film, and then it's like somebody else is having big hits. And so this is where you need to focus on your identity and coach yourself. And again, it's about life's experiences, and it's about who you hang around with and how you deal with things and how other people deal with things. So here we are in the heart of Leeds, and anybody from Leeds who supports Leeds, they would know how to lose.
Let's rephrase that. If you're a Leeds United supporter, you've probably got a better idea of how to lose than if you're a Leeds Rhino supporter, although they're having to get used to that now.
Right. So here's the deal. It's like if you lose, or if you don't win a race, or if you don't get this time, everything's still okay at some level. But when people build up, I can't be happy unless I get that. You get people running marathons and there might be 2 seconds, 10 seconds off the time they want, and they're gutted. It's because they've programmed and built their mind up to this thing outside their body at a time. Chill out a little bit.
Why is it we focus, in athletic events, particularly where there's a clock, why is it we focus so much on the time? Is that because it's a tangible measure of how we've done? Because particularly in a triathlon, where you're on the go for anywhere from, you know, an hour right up to 17 hours, there are so many challenges throughout the day, so many little elements that you need to master,
right,
where you could gain satisfaction. You could tick off, right, I got started, got through the swim, tick, got onto my bike, tick, got through the bike, went up that hill that I didn't think I could do, went down that hill I didn't think I could do, got to the end. You know, you've ticked off 40 or 50 things, you know, plus challenges you didn't even think of during the day. But because we didn't tick off the time box, all of a sudden, life is a disappointment. So
it's because of how they've programmed themselves. And it's like, if I don't do that, then I'm this. And they beat themselves up, where you get other people, I'm just going out to finish. And they enjoy it. And it's not about the time, it's about the task. I've done that task. But that's a psychological thing that people need to be aware of, because it can damage them mentally, not physically. I mean, you get a lot of people who are massively physically fit, but they're not happy. I think the trick is to be robust mentally and physically, and have that dance, and have a reality check. But with elite sports people and people who are very competitive, they program themselves almost that if I don't get that, or if we don't get that deal, or if we don't get that race at that time, then that means I am this. And there's so many variables, especially in a triathlon. It could change your time 10 minutes, just the temperature, or the shoes or the terrain or, you know, the weather. So, it's that dance. And I'm not here to say, you know, if you're a triathlete, don't go for that, but just be kind to yourself, because in the whole scheme of things, does it really matter? And there'll be some people listening to this saying, yeah, it bloody does. But it's up to you to do whatever it takes to get yourself across that line at that time. You're in control of that. And I guarantee there'll be people that miss it by 10 seconds and it'll be due to that bacon and egg or that full breakfast or not getting in the pool or hanging around with that person.
You mentioned that triathletes are the sorts of people that tend to achieve more because, and then you reeled off a list of characteristics and traits there: resilience, determination, consistency. I mean, if you don't have those, are they skills that, are they mindset skills that you can develop?
Of course they are, yeah. I mean, so I've spoken to a lot of triathletes, spoken to you, and anybody can do a marathon. But you can't do it if you don't believe you can. But anybody can do a marathon. Then if you say, well, I want to do it in this, I want to do it in that, you're then putting constraints on yourself. And it's all about, again, getting information, hanging around, having experiences, learning. And you do that by hanging around with people, putting yourself in a position where, right, I'm going to put myself in a position with people who are better than me, who know more than me, and then just ascend through the levels. And to some degree, the speed at which you ascend is the speed at which you believe or have a reason to do that. And some people go right to the top and stay there. Other people need to ascend gradually based on, and sometimes the reason can get more impactful because of whatever the reason is. But it all depends on the reason why you're doing it and the decision you make and whether it's totally in line with who you are. But then one of the things that I've noticed with triathletes is they get very addictive. It's like golfers. It's almost like they do a triathlon or they do a marathon, then it's like, I'm going to do this. And then I've been sat at a breakfast with like triathletes who were talking a totally different language. Are you doing this? Oh, I'm doing that. And they're talking about these different sort of runs. And then they're like saying, oh, have you done the A run and the B run? All these triathlons with different, have you done the Aberford one, the Bramley one? And they're like going through the bloody alphabet. So they're addictive personalities as well, which is good, but also it would have maybe a downside as well. But the triathletes that I know, that their bodies are finely tuned, they look good, they feel good. There would be some, for my money, there would be some social costs that if they weren't aware of that, they would benefit from doing that. And by social costs, I mean their partners or their children or the time that they dedicate to triathlon, is it worth that investment to other things they could be investing in?
That's an interesting point. There's this phenomenon now about, you know, I mean, I did my first Ironman race in 1995, so that's 20 plus years ago. I had a little tattoo on my shoulder of the M dot. So I basically got a tattoo of a corporate logo. I don't see people walking around with little half-bitten apples on their shoulder. Or a Nike swoosh, or any other corporate, or McDonald's golden arches. But I do see people with these tattoos. And when I first had one, there wasn't many people who got them. So it was like a badge of honour. So I've got a few friends who are in the Special Forces, and they call it being in the reg. And they'll see people with these little tattoos, and they'll recognise them and go, oh, that's he was in the reg. And they go and chat to them, because it's an elite little group with a small number of people carrying this badge of honour. Now, the growth in Ironman, particularly as a brand, has been huge. And you can walk around Leeds and probably bump into somebody with an Ironman tattoo, and everybody's trying to go for bigger and better designs on their legs and on their arms. When I first started, and many people who started at the same time will probably have followed the same path, is that you did a small triathlon, and then a couple of years later you did a bigger one, and then you did a half Ironman, and then eventually you thought, right, I'm ready now. These days, people are just, they've read so much about it, they're going, right, I'm going to do an Ironman. I've never done a triathlon before, but I'm going to do an Ironman, because a marathon's not enough. Marathon's too easy, everybody does those, so I'm going to do an Ironman, and I'm going to pick the toughest one, so I'm going to go to Lanzarote. So then they get on the internet and, you know, and within 60 seconds you fill the form in and you press the button and you've swiped your credit card and off you go, you're in. And then they start thinking, oh, how am I going to get, I can't swim. Oh, I better ask the wife who's got plans because it's the wedding anniversary. So, you know, or you'd forgotten that little Johnny's doing his O-levels this summer and you need to be there for him or he's going off to university. Or that they've got a big business conference that, you know, they're presenting at and that's going to cause problems because of the training. So they do everything back to front. And but then when it doesn't start to fit into their life, you know, when they can't do the training for this big goal that they've got there because the friends were doing it. So maybe their reason why was just because they didn't want to get FOMO, you know, fear of missing out. They didn't want to have FOMO, so they did it because their mates are entering. They've now not got a solution to the problem. And then they start to get frustrated. So in that situation, and it's something I've faced a lot as a coach, of athletes not having the time to do the training they think they're doing, what's your bailout there? Are you fully committed? You're financially committed? Or do you just, can you hold your hands up and say to yourself, I've made a mistake here, I'm going to have to put this off?
Well, again,
for
me, I always look at patterns. So when somebody comes to me with a problem, a challenge, I listen and I'm listening for the patterns that they're manifesting that are not working, patterns that are working. So if somebody makes a commitment, right, I'm going to do an Ironman. They've jumped right past the 5K, 10K, marathon, triathlon, Ironman.
But it could be, I mean, Ironman's a metaphor. They could just, I've not got any experience, but I'm going to start a business. Right. So and the reason, move to America.
The reason why they do that is because beliefs have changed globally. So if you go back to Roger Bannister, we were talking about him previously, you and I, people had an image because of a suggestion. If you run a 4-minute mile, your lungs will explode. So people had that image in their mind. So they tended not to get across the line. But then I think when Roger Bannister had succeeded in that year, somebody, one of your readers will like tell me if I'm wrong or right. I think there was like over 100 or a couple of hundred people that did it because it had happened.
Maybe not that many, but a lot.
But it'd be interesting for somebody to like come back and say it was this amount.
Somebody will.
Yeah, somebody will. So now when you go on the internet and you see people that look, wow, that guy looks like me, or that guy looks older than me, or look, there's a woman doing that and there's a kid doing that. So it's almost like the belief is there, whereas years ago, without this stimuli coming in, it was only like that guy in the pub that stands at the end of the bar who like lifts weights and, yeah, I'm not like him. But anybody can do anything. And so beliefs have changed. And that's a really interesting thing because a lot of people, the only thing that stops them doing other things is their beliefs. And beliefs are not true. They're just things that we make up in our minds. So for triathletes, there's a lot of good patterns that they do to be a good triathlete that they can they're transferable. It's just interesting.
Right.
But it is a huge thing because a lot of people now, you know, if you're at a dinner party, a wedding or a gathering, you're going to bump into two or three people who are having a chat about Kona or Lanzarote.
There's far,
you know,
too many of those people. I'm going to start drinking again. Nobody talks about that anymore. But there will be times when you get people who, you talked about mental health, and when they can't do the training, so we mentioned guilt earlier, you miss a training session and then people feel guilty because they didn't go to that swim session because they were tired. They decided to have a morning in bed, but then because it's on the training program and it's now a red box, there's a little bit of guilt. Or they can't do the training, so there's frustration and some guilt. But it's in their head, and so they're starting to, the pressure in the head starting to go up. You know, I mean, firstly, the guilt thing, I don't understand, because I miss Coronation Street every night and I never feel guilty about
Shame
it.
Shame on you.
I missed your birthday and I didn't.
Shame on you.
And I didn't feel guilty about that, but a session. Yeah. So as a coach or an athlete listening to this that is self-coached, at that point when those things start to build up in the head, and it does, and it can start to affect people's mental health, as we touched on earlier, what sort of skills can they employ there to try and balance everything out a little bit and give the head a bit of space?
There's something called reframing. It's where you take something, so like guilt, and you reframe it. You change its meaning, or you change something about it so it doesn't have the same impact. So if you think about guilt, and again, as someone who studies psychology and is interested in how things work, for guilt to work, guilt is a word that we put on a sensation that we have. So for you to experience guilt, something must have happened previously that has give you a thought that you've done something wrong or something's not right. So to experience guilt, you can't have guilt unless you've learned something.
So
when you have guilt, it's like you've just learned something. It's over. If you steal something from a shop and you don't feel guilt, then everything's fine. But if you steal something from a shop and then you feel guilty, it means that you've learned that that behavior I did isn't right.
So
that means you've learned. So I would suggest to everybody who's listening, the more guilt you can have, the more you're going to learn and the better life you're going to.
So
guilt's not a bad thing.
No, it
means learning.
I want to get in here. So this guilt, when you miss a session, it probably goes somewhere back to school when you missed swimming and the teacher shouted at you.
If you're doing this consistently,
put you on detention.
Right. So if you're doing this consistently and you have a lot of guilt in your life, then maybe there's something around the word guilt that is in your past that needs to be
right.
approached. But guilt, if you miss a session, it's like you've learned how to miss a session. You know, praise the Lord. We know if we do X, Y, and Z, we're going to miss a session. So you've actually learned. So you could reframe it, not guilt, but learning. But guilt comes in a big bandwidth. If you have a lot of things in your life where you're feeling this thing, then you're calling it guilt, then you have something that maybe you want to pay attention to. And I guess a lot of people who do triathlons, a lot of people who do golf, these are sports that take you away from your family and other things. The guilt would be something that you would feel because it's like, should I be here? Should I be there? And this is where there's a conflict.
Yeah, I'd say a lot of triathletes aren't guilty about spending time away from
Do you know the beautiful thing about that is because athletes and triathletes who do that have got a lot of things right in their life where their children are proud and they support them for doing that. And their wives and partners are really pleased and support them because by doing that, they've been who they are. And there's nothing better you can do for your children or for other people around you to be who you are. And if that's who you are, that actually helps other people.
I've got a question for you first. Before, in just a couple of minutes, I just wanted to put... sort of tie this everyday thing up with a few tips, but I've got a question. You mentioned Rocky earlier and the Eye of the Tiger, and we've seen it loads of times, and I've heard loads of my friends saying, yeah, when I put that music on, it really motivates me. And I see people running and they've got their headphones on. They seem to be totally disengaged from the world, you know, and then when we do race briefings, we tell them they're not allowed to wear headphones because it's a safety thing and they wouldn't be able to hear a marshal whistling at them or a car coming. And they seem almost lost without the ability to run with music. I talked to Malcolm Brown, who was the running coach who worked with the performance triathletes for many years. He worked with Paula Radcliffe and Kelly Holmes. And Malcolm's thing is when you're out running and you're running through the woods, listen to the trees rustling in the wind, listen to the leaves and the branches breaking underneath your feet. Be at one with that moment in your head. Just enjoy the process. It's not about running hard. It's about the process of running and feeling free and flowing. And then there seems to be another group of people at the other end of the spectrum who aren't able to do that at all and can only run if they have this external stimuli from music. Now, is that something to do with the fact that they're not actually enjoying the running and they need something to distract them from the running? Is it something, are they trying to run too hard and therefore it's a distraction from the discomfort they feel? Or is there something else I'm missing here?
Again, it's all down to unconscious patterns. So in different contexts of our life, we have different patterns. So if we take the internal and the external, someone who's internal, they would make all the decisions and be influenced by what happens in their head, not what happens outside. So these are the people that will sort of do what they want. The external people will be people, do I look good in this? And is this all right? Or what do you think? They'd be on Google, they'd be on their phone, getting external information to check whether it's okay to feel in a certain way. If you're running with music, I've heard lots of studies that would say that's not a good thing to do for safety reasons. That's not a good thing to do for multiple other reasons. But for some people, it actually boosts them into a different state. So if you're going to run and you're listening to Enya, and if you're going to run and you're listening to, I don't know, Iron Maiden, your speed and your rhythm is going to be different. So sound for some athletes in some contexts will make them feel different. And also, there's certain sounds that put you back to certain times in your life where you were maybe a different person to who you are now. So if you're a married person, there may be sounds that put you back to when you were single or you were a bit freer. And you can be free if you're married as well.
Don't go down that rabbit hole. Avoid that.
What I'm saying is that there's certain pieces of music that inspire a person at a certain time. So it might be like when it's a cold night in November, you don't feel like going out, but you know what? I'm off for a run with meatloaf. And that just warms you up. Or it's like, I'm going to have a couple of hours with Kim Wilde and Debbie Harry down that canal, running.
You've lost most people now. I think most people know who Meatloaf is. Debbie Harry, maybe. Kim Wilde. They'll just think of her as the gardening lady. Yeah.
Britney Spears, Beyonce, you know. Justin Timberlake.
Okay. So really, regardless of the research, it comes down
it's
to
personal
individual.
Preference.
What
works also
for
safety.
You?
I mean, you know, let's not forget the safety aspect, because wherever you are training, to some degree, there will be other people. There may be other dangers there that if you have got sound, you could be limited. So that's an obvious heads up.
Okay. Right at the beginning, I promised the listeners that we would give them some tips. Now, I've made a couple here that I put stars by. It seems to me like the top one of these would be understanding why. What's your why? Why are you doing this thing? You, nothing else that we put on this list is going to happen effectively without that one.
Yeah, that's the big one, because it's almost like committing to going in a relationship with this thing called triathlon. It's like any relationship. You need to know why you're entering that and what the rules are and how serious are you? Is it just a part-time relationship? Is it fully committed? But you need to know your reason why. And that's not just with triathletes. It's with anything you do in life. If you don't know the reason why, somewhere along the line, it's not going to work out too well. But with a triathlon, there's certain key things that you're going to need to do that might not be easy, that if you know your reason why, that's going to carry you through.
I also put a big star by the support team. The people you have around you, the people that encourage you, the people that you aspire to be, the people that inspire you. Would that be second? Would that be a good second?
I would say that's a good second. And also I would say it's the people who are around you or who you feel are around you. So as you run, there may be someone who's passed, who is not on this plane right now. And the fact that you are fit, you're well, you're doing something that's something that you want to do, just thinking about that person or those people, that would also connect with you and get you through there.
Chrissy Wellington, you may not know Chrissy, but triathletes do. Chrissy was won the Ironman 4 times. She was dominant back in the 2010. Chrissy said that in the final few miles of an Ironman marathon, she would dedicate 5 minutes each to people, significant people in her life. And in that 5 minutes, she would get into a state where she thought about that person. So it would be a grandma, and she would think about a grandma, and she would try to remember times. And then she would think about a coach, and and then she would think about a childhood and people that she used to try to beat at school. And so she would have 5 minutes dedicated to each of those people. So some of those would have passed.
Yeah, and it's almost like there's something that I've heard a lot of people do. They would visualize the finish line and the people who would be there. And sometimes this is the person who helped me at school, the person who bought me my first running shoes, my grandma, my granddad, people who are there or not there, but they would visualize doing that. And also when they come into a hard part in the triathlon, they would imagine people who were their arch enemies or people who said they couldn't do that, they would imagine them at the sideline bullying them, and that would take them through the tough bits. So these are your support team and also your not support team, because to some degree it's like sticking two fingers up at these people that have like done you in over the years. And sometimes you might need them more than the support team.
All right, so that's two. What would be next on our list of important?
Another one that I would say that a lot of people benefit from is music and sounds. You see a lot of footballers, you see a lot of athletes with like, you know, 200 or 300 pound headphones on, and it makes me curious, what is it they're listening to? What is that all about? There'll be different reasons. So here's a little tip for the listeners. If you Google the number one songs that were on your birthday in your lifetime or in a certain decade, and if you then download them and put them on a playlist, and then if you randomize the playlist when you're doing a bike ride or when you're doing a run, these sounds, usually, if it's your birthday, would be around times that were pleasurable. Or if there's other significant times in your life that have been monumental or pivotal for you, if you put those tracks in there as well, because when you're running, your body is in the zone. You've not lost your mojo. You're actually with your mojo because everything's operating. Your mind and your body are totally connected. And then if you get the input of some sounds that generate to every cell of your body when you're thinking about something that you need to decide, or when you're just in the zone, something will happen unconsciously. There'll be a shift. And that's something that you cannot do any other way. It's all about the state that you're in, and it's all about the stimuli that comes in to do that. So I would also say, these are things that are dormant in a person's unconscious mind. So Google significant tracks that are like, if we were going to make a film of your life, listener, this would be the soundtrack. And you will know what these songs are, but you won't know what they'll feel like until you're actually in an optimum bike ride or in an optimum run, and randomize them so that they're not in a chronological order.
Interesting that Dan Hunt, who was the men's pursuit team coach for 2008 or 2012 in the cycling, track cycling, he created a little video and he put it to the soundtrack of I'm Not Afraid by Eminem. And it was about 4 minutes long. And he got clips of them sitting around on the track laughing and joking. There'd be, you know, the first meeting that they had, there would be clips of them in races where they were going on the podium and getting a bronze. And then a minute or two later, after some more clips, it would be them racing against the Australians in the World Championship and getting silver. And then towards the end, it would be them setting the world record in the World Championships just before the Olympics. So you could see that there was a theme of them getting better and better, being a tight-knit unit, working together until it came to the, you know, the finish. And that was the video that he played before and after every training session. He showed it at this presentation and a couple of people said, that's fantastic, would you mind if I have that? And he said, nope, you can't have it. It's for, there are a small group of people, the coaching team and the athletes are the only people who have that, and I'm not sharing it because it's special to them. And it's, you know, it's a remembrance of, or a, you know, a reminder of their journey. But I thought that was amazing. I watched it and you could see everybody, they all sat up and everybody said, oh, that made the hair stand up on the back of my neck. And I guess it would have done for the riders as well.
Well, that's it. Your unconscious has got so many resources that you need to activate continually. And that's what you do when you go for a run. But you need to connect with that and stimulate that.
Do we need to put any more on here, or is that three enough to get us through our daily, so the daily grind?
Know your reason why. Have a good support team, music, and I would just add probably one of the most important to all your listeners: be more Yorkshire.
Be more Yorkshire.
Be more Yorkshire. Mm. The Yorkshire people will know what that means. Other people, you might have to ask some friends, Google, or just hang around with more people that are from Yorkshire and your life will be fine.
Well, that could be part of the support team as well. Okay, right at the beginning, when I introduced this conversation, I made the point that race day is only 3 or 4 days out of the year. But that's upon what your whole season hangs, particularly if you're a professional athlete. But even for people that are listening to this that are age groupers, that's the day they've earmarked to come in the top five. That's the one they've earmarked for their personal best. So they've utilised your four tips there, John. They've been resilient, they've been determined, they've had consistency, they know what their identity is, they know the reason why, you know, they've mixed with the right people. They've got to race week now, because race day can be adjusted what happens there by affected by what happens in the race week. So let's talk about how there's a fear of not performing. There's a fear because you've committed to your friends that you're going to do this, and then there's a worry that you won't do it and what will happen in the aftermath of the race if you don't. And that can paralyze some people. I'd like to just talk about how we can approach that race week and race day full of confidence rather than fear. I mean, nerves are good. Everybody has nerves, because usually if you don't have them, it means you've been a bit complacent. And even the world's best triathletes and athletes wish that the world could open them up as their gun's about to go. But as soon as they get in there, they're in the zone. So what can we do on race week to make sure it all happens as we planned?
Well, again, it'd be to lose the word fear. So fear, again, is a label that we put on a feeling. So if we're both going for the same race and we both medically feel the same feeling, but you choose to put, I'm just feeling fear, and I put another word on there, that word would have a different semantic meaning to my mental output. So I could put excited. It could be the same feeling, but if you call that fear, that then is going to create your mind into making limits that are going to affect you. So again, reframing, paying attention to how you think, how you talk. Fear is just a label that we put on something. I'd reframe that. I'd call it something else. Nerves, that's okay. But if you call it fear, for some people that might work. It's like, yeah, I'm feeling the fear. That's going to help me feel the fear and do it anyway. But sometimes that might not be a good word for me. If I feel a feeling, I might call it excitement, or I might call it motive. Oh, I can feel the motivation now. Whatever you call it, that's what it will be. And your unconscious mind will play that out. So if you call that fear, whatever fear means to you, your mind will play that out. And for some people, that might not be a good word to attach to a feeling. And again, what I'd add is, you know, we're talking about race day. What your listeners have got to pay attention to, every day is race day. It's like human race day. So, you know, just celebrate every bloody day. But in race week and race day, I know these are important. This is where the people you've been hanging around with, you need to be them. You need to step up, and you need to recognize, this is, after this race, I'm going to be different. And you need to like make a big mental picture of you at the end being however you want to be, doing whatever you want to do. Because these race days are, at some level, some big, huge psychological personality changes for people. And you need to be drawn to that. So to some degree, these are significant to people's mental health, these race days. But also remember, and I can't tell everybody how to step it up in race week, they'll know. They'll know what they should do and what they shouldn't do. And this is where you're taking no prisoners. You eat, you train, you do, you think, you hang around with. You do it meticulously. Maybe more than you've been doing.
So you've got to
crank it up. And it's almost like, yeah, you might not think you're capable. Forget about you. Be somebody else. You will all have models who are better than you. Be them. In America, in the Walt Disney Corporation, if they've got a problem, a challenge, should we do this? Should we borrow that? Should we build it this big? There's just one question. What would Walt do? So my sort of suggestion to your listeners is, yeah, forget about it. What would whoever it is
What would
do?
A Yorkshireman do?
What would a Yorkshireman do? There you go. .com. Yeah. But yeah,
well,
just
think of a Yorkshire triathlete now. Who do we know that's a Yorkshireman who's a triathlete? Come on, listeners. Get your thinking caps on.
Yeah.
What would X do?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's really what other people might know is visualising there, isn't it?
It's when you talk about how you see yourself. It's also incorporating. You know, what would everybody would have a hero. Everybody would have someone that they aspire to be. In race week, act and be whoever that is.
See, this is interesting to me. If you go to a championship event, you see the pro athletes who have this identity and they walk around, you see them, they warm up, they turn up early to go to the swim. You don't see them out at night in the bars. And the age groupers will say, ah, yeah, but he's a podium contender. You know, it's all right for him. And they feel uncomfortable pretending to be that person because I'm not the world champion. But those guys became world champions because they exhibited those behaviours before then. They didn't just start behaving like that when they got a medal round the neck and they got an accolade. They got to that position because they were displaying those professional behaviours, getting into character, I think they called it in Pulp Fiction, didn't they?
Yeah.
Getting into character. So there's no reason why you can't get into character. So that must be a self-esteem issue about why people don't feel like they can get into that.
So for me, when I was, about 9... I was like really thin and I was like a really fast runner. And at my school, I'd win everything. It was just like, just a done deal. So whenever I've been tested in anything, I just like, what would he do? What would that 9-year-old me do? Because he just believed the world is just like, is a done deal. And so everybody would have a younger self where things were just right. And that, whoever that was, whoever that had been, they sort of still live within you. And it's up to you at times when you need that person to bring out their values, their beliefs, and be that person to get you through. Because as kids, we're not contaminated with beliefs and other things that adults are. And sometimes it's nice to pretend to be more childlike, to let go of the beliefs and just imagine. As we grow up, we're told you can't do this, you can't do that. But yeah, so either be somebody who you've been hanging around with, who you aspire to be, a hero, or be somebody who you used to be that believed and acted differently to you now, the adult.
I've experienced this myself in race week. You've done all your training, you've been really confident, but then the doubts start to creep in. You start to wonder, can I do that? Particularly if you're doing, let's say you're doing an Ironman for the first time. You might have ridden 112 miles, which is the, you know, the bike distance. You might have ridden it in training, but you've never really done in training a 2.5 mile swim before. And you might have run a marathon, but you've never done a marathon when you've swum for an hour and a half and you've cycled for 7 hours. And the guilt, the doubts start entering.
Right, so this is imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're stood at the start of a bloody triathlon and these doubts come in, just like take a bit of a check in with yourself. You've not ended up there by accident. This is not an accident that you are at the start of a triathlon. That's a big sort of leveler. And the doubts do it. It's your unconscious mind just letting you know that we're here. And the doubts are there to spur you on. So welcome them, but nobody ends up at the start of a bloody triathlon by accident. You've earned it, and it's your time to shine. So welcome the doubts, but, you know, it's not an accident that you're right there.
Let's just fast forward past the finish line. And this could probably apply to many big, significant events that we have in our life that we build up to over many years or many months. So in this instance, we're doing this triathlon. We've been building up to it throughout the winter. We've done all this training. We've employed a coach. We've employed a mindset coach. It's been the sole focus for us. And we get to this day and it's successful. We come across the line. We look at the clock. We've achieved all of our goals. We never thought we could do it, but we've done it. We've got the medal. You know, you trundle through the finishers thing, you get your t-shirt, you sit down with all the other guys, you swap war stories, you go back to your family, you have your finishers photographs. Then the next morning you wake up and the focus has gone. That thing that occupied, the thing that gave you the reason why every morning isn't there anymore. And we all know it's going to happen, but yet we seem unprepared for that moment. What can we do in those days. And I say this, I say it could apply to other areas. It happens to when people are having, you're getting married, you know, and maybe it's not the couple that are getting married, but maybe the mother of the bride is planning all this. And then all of a sudden she's worked up to this for months and then she's left with a sense of loss and an emptiness. Is how do we, what do we do then? And how do we employ our mind to help us get past that moment?
Right. I'll tell you what you do, in my opinion, which is something that people tend not to do, but when they do it, they have a big, huge learning and a big, huge emotional impact. You are going to have that where the next morning you wake up and it's all over type of thing. You take a little bit of time for yourself to recognize who you are now and the fact that you have achieved whatever you've achieved. You ask yourself, what can I learn now? And then you think, who do I need to thank? And you ring and you call or you go and see the people who you need to thank that have brought you to that moment. And when you do that, and only when you do that, you ask yourself, what next? And then you repeat. But this is something that a lot of people tend not to do. You learn what you need to learn, and then you just reflect, who's brought me here? What messages, what good faith, what gestures? And it may be a school teacher, it may be a neighbour who, I don't know, but you will know. You thank people and you tell them why, and that will sort of round something off. And it's something that people very rarely do in today's world because they're very busy. Don't do it on Twitter, don't do it on Facebook, do it in the privacy of...
Yeah, or do something different, like handwrite a note and deliver it to somebody, not a text.
Do something that's meaningful. Do something so that everybody will give you like 100 likes or 200 likes. Make somebody's day. Let them know that, do you know what? That one thing that you did actually made me do this.
I've written down repay the loan there. We talked earlier about how, you know, you were taking away time from your loved ones. You perhaps having to ask colleagues at work to cover for you. In order to do all the training that helps you get to the race, you're borrowing.
Yeah.
You're borrowing goodwill from people. And that's like a loan. You can't have that goodwill forever. It has to be repaid back. And what you've just mentioned there is what I call repaying the goodwill loan. So now is the time to pay back. You know, those nights when you didn't go out with your wife, when you didn't go to the pub to meet your mates on a Friday night, now's the time to reconnect with those people who ignored for a bit.
The great thing about that, when you've repaid that loan, you can take a bigger loan out.
For the next one.
Yeah, for the next one. But yeah, you repay the loan. It's something that people tend not to do. Mm. And it's a nice practice to do that. And everybody, whatever you do, if it's a triathlon, if it's anything, sometimes if you reflect, wow, I've just done that. There's a whole host of people's stories that have crossed your story to help you get there. You've not done it alone. Even though you think you have, you've not. So who do you need to thank?
Let's just recap on the race day skills and tactics that we outlined there. The first thing we talked about was this fear that we have. We all have it. There's nothing wrong with it, but perhaps it's just needs reframing that word into something that's more positive than negative.
If fear works for some people, and for some of the listeners, they might want to feel that because it's part of their race day. For other people, it might be a bit of a hindrance and it might sort of knock their confidence. Change that word into something that addresses those feelings but changes the semantic meaning so that your brain is programmed in a different way. But there's nothing wrong with calling a feeling fear if it works, but if it doesn't, change it.
We had this idea of be someone else. What would a Yorkshireman do?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're just teasing with a Yorkshireman, but it could be, what would a Lancashireman do? Or, well, you know, what would a Scouser do? Or what would a Cockney do? Or a Scotsman? Or what would my granddad do? Or what would my brother do? Or
yeah, it's somebody that inspires you or you respect.
Totally,
yeah.
And what that does mentally, it moves you from your value system and your filter system into somebody else's. And when you truly do that, your mind will give you an answer. So for me, I use the metaphor of James Bond. So whatever situation I come up against where I feel, shit, what do I do? I just think, right, okay, which Bond do I need to be? Is it Daniel Craig or is it Sean Connery here? Or is it a Roger Moore situation?
Mm.
And and to some degree, that works for me. But everybody would have their own metaphor. And, you know, I say this quite flippantly, but for a lot of people, this gets them through huge presentations. It gets through massive events in their life where it's like, you know, you're going to be really shit at this. Be somebody else.
You told us a story, didn't you, at a presentation we did about the guy. Was he Bruce Springsteen?
Yeah, I mean, a corporate guy who was a very financially driven guy, like a nerd, you could say, uncharismatic. And he was sent to Las Vegas to talk to some investors for a huge project called Mirage. It didn't come off because everything crashed. But this was like something like a billion-dollar investment of like several hotels. And his job was, and the numbers were quite sexy, but he wasn't. He was like a statue. And my job was to help him become more charismatic and become exciting. But he wasn't. So I mean, this like went on to like the night before, and he was just like, you know, who, it was his entrance music. Somebody says, oh, what entrance music are you having? So he says, oh, I don't know. I says, well, you better think about it because they need it. It's tomorrow. And like, you know, we got to crack on with this charisma thing. So he says, oh, Bruce Springsteen. I says, what? He says, well, I'm from New Jersey. And he changed. He's like physiology and his tone. I said, well, tell me about, I says, how would Bruce Springsteen deliver these figures? And he totally changed. So I said to them, get the music. And we played the music. He walked up. That was it. We had to almost drag him off. He was like a roaring success, but it wasn't him. It was Bruce Springsteen.
Right. Okay. So be somebody else. You know, if being Dave Scott or being Alistair Brownlee or being Daniela Reef is your thing,
and it could be fluid. You don't have to be that. But yeah. It's just like the more you have these characters and the more you think in the characters' sort of frame of reference, your unconscious mind will just. It's like, bloody hell, what have I just done? It's like, well, you didn't do that. Elton John did that.
Was there anything else that we needed to put on?
I think your listeners have got good value for money there.
Right. And then finally then, when you've crossed the line, you've got your medal, you've had a few beers, and you wake up the next morning, please don't forget to repay the loan and make an effort. Don't just send text messages. Don't send emails. That's far too easy. Pick up the phone to somebody you can't go and visit. But if you can go and visit them, make an effort. And if you can't pick up the phone and make an effort to visit, write them a note, a personalised note on a handwritten sheet of paper, and then write the envelope and put a first-class stamp on it. Great. Well, we're either going to get lots of complaints, John, about this.
Oh, I hope we do. I feel really guilty if we don't.
or we're going to be top of the pops next week. So, John, the mindset man, John Thompson, everybody, thank you for being here, John.
You're welcome. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. Listeners, that was John Thompson. My name's Simon Ward. I'm your host every week. This is the Triathlon Coach Swapcast. Thank you for listening. As always, next week, we'll be back with more fantastic guests. Enjoy the rest of your week. That's a wrap for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening to the conversation, and I hope you learned at least one thing. If this is the first time you've listened in, please go back and take a listen to some of our previous guests, and I can guarantee they will be just as good as the one you've just heard. If you've been a regular listener, then thank you for being a part of this journey with me so far. Finally, I'd like to take just a few seconds to tell you about my SWAT Inner Circle program. In the last few years, I spent an awful lot of time creating training programs and resources to help you train and race at whatever triathlon distance you choose. And for some of the events outside of triathlon like aquabike, duathlon and swim run events. As a SWAT member, you get access to all of these plans for 12 months of the year. And on top of that, we provide guidance on strength and conditioning, nutrition, plus a whole host of other supportive activities which help you to train, recover and race better. We also have a really friendly Facebook community. It's an exclusive Facebook page for SWAT members only, and there are over 150 of them already. If you join, you'll be able to get access to that page and you'll be able to ask for help, and our members are all too happy to provide guidance and advice based on their experiences.
I'll also be there to help you find solutions to your training problems, and all you have to do is tag me in the Facebook page in one of your posts, or you can book a 15-minute phone call should you need one. If you'd like more information, or if you're ready to press the button and join the SWAT Inner Circle, just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send you all of the details. So that's all for this week. Hopefully I'll see you again next week, same time, same place, with a different guest.